Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You're listening to Farming News with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello there and welcome to the Irish Farmers Journal Farming News Podcast. Barry Murphy with you here from the news team. I'm joined on the line today by our beef editor Adam Woods, deputy news editor Amy Ford, political correspondent Pat O'Toole and our news correspondents Declan O'Brien and Rachel Donovan. Over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll discuss how tighter cattle supplies are set to drive on beef prices. We'll discuss the fallout at the Kerry Co-op, farm safety, planning issues and a new scheme for sheep farmers. First up, Adam Woods, on page one this week, you report that tight cattle supplies are set to drive on beef prices. Look, Adam, yourself and myself, we were down at that IFA beef meeting in Leash on Tuesday night. It was a heated affair at times and farmers are crying out for a price rise. I suppose, Adam, look, where are we on price at the moment and where can you see it going?
Yeah, I guess we've seen an improvement, Barry, over the last sort of 7 days, a real fall off in the supply of cattle. We looked at the national kill over the last 5 weeks. And actually, when you look at it, the cow kill is very, very high. But that's actually camouflaging the fact that the prime cattle kill is dropping. And the prime cattle kill is dropping at the rate of 1,000 a week over the last 5 weeks. That's putting real pressure on factories to try and get prime cattle for retail markets. Very, very busy retail markets coming up to Christmas. So that means that the price has increased. And look, we've seen some processors increase the price by as much as 20 cent a kilo over the last week. And we would expect that to go more because finished cattle supplies, I think, will get tighter. A lot of factory agents on the ground would say that, you know, the smaller finishers have walked away from the business based on lack of factory engagement. And I think, you know, we're going to see that tighten more coming up. Interesting to hear Paul Nolan from Dawn Meat speak of, you know, possible 540 base price early in 2023. And that's based on Dawn Meat's looking at supplies and looking at demand coming down the road.
It's definitely, I suppose, something the farmers are looking for Adam, and they're really... The views shared on Tuesday night, they were quite strong, particularly towards Paul Nolan. But look, I think he was the only representative from the meat processors there. I suppose, do you see the IFA escalating things here on this beef price issue? I understand they're meeting Meat Industry Ireland next week. Do you see any more coming from it?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that, I guess. Look, at the pressure is on there as regards getting some delivery for beef farmers. I know that the IFA would have come in for some criticism at that meeting in Portlaoise over what has been done to date. And look, when you look at that 50 cent, it's very, very frustrating from a beef farmer's point of view. Tim Cullinan said that on Tuesday night. 6 million a week it's costing Irish farmers at the moment in terms of that 50 cent gap between here and the UK and EU markets. Obviously, that MII meeting will be very, very important. I think we'll probably see, you know, beef quotes increase between now and then, and that could take off a little bit of pressure. But remember, we're still a long way off. Chagas was there on the night too. Aidan Murray showed that, you know, €6 a kilo was needed there to break even. We're a long way off that. And whether IFA will take the view that, look, we need to go higher a lot quicker, it'll be interesting to see that. And look, we'll watch that space.
Yeah, definitely. Look, you've more on that €6 kilo, that point from Aidan Murray from Togish on page 8. We also have several farmer views from the floor at the IFA meeting on Tuesday night. And I spoke to South Leinster IFA chair Francie Gorman. The Leishman chaired proceedings and told me where the IFA might go on this if farmers don't get the price increase they're seeking. We hear from him now. We're here with Francie Gorman, the South Leinster Chair of the IFA. Francie, look, you organised this meeting tonight. It's a beef meeting in Laois on, I suppose, look, the 50 cent price differential between Irish beef price and EU price. There are 300 farmers here tonight. Look, what did you make of the meeting? You know, farmer anger, is it there?
Farmer anger is there, undoubtedly. And look, it was organised between ourselves and National Livestock Chairman Brendan Golden. And I think the one message that came out of the meeting is the frustration about the price gap that exists between us and the price of our competitor in European markets and the UK market. And I mean, Joe Burke said it's at a 12-year high. That price gap.
And Paul Nolan was here from Dáil Meats, and look, just I think the best way of analysing was he got a fair old doing from farmers. Francie, do you know, would you be hopeful now that he goes back to the boss men in Dáil, and that I suppose the processors step up here and deliver some sort of a price increase in the weeks ahead?
Well, I would, and I think they should, and I think they will, and I think if they're clever, they'll take the message home from the room tonight, because it's quite clear there that anybody that's going to put cattle in and feed them this winter is taking a massive financial risk, probably greater than they have for many a day. And I think that was the message that I think came out of the meeting tonight, that farmers need to understand that There's demand for the cattle there now. They're not there in the numbers that the factory would have hoped that they are, and that there's an opportunity to drive price on, and that every farmer that's going to sell his cattle needs to put a proper value on them and hold hard when it comes to selling them. And look, we'll take stock of what happened at the meeting here tonight, and if price is not driving on in a way that we like, we may well consider further action.
And you mentioned there during, I suppose, your own analysis of the night, there's an MII meeting in the calendar with meeting the Sheridan next week. I suppose, what is the ask going into that meeting from the IFA?
The ask going in for that's going to have to bridge that gap that exists between us and particularly the tracker, which is 50 cent a kilo less. I think Adam outlined it earlier on. Today, it's actually 65 cent a kilo. That price gap has to be bridged, full stop. And to say that, you know, we're exporting more of our beef than... because we're exporting such a percentage of our beef that price can't be achieved, that's nonsense. So it is.
Moving on to Amy Ford, our deputy news editor. Amy, look, we've been to-ing and fro-ing on this Food Vision beef and sheep group in recent days. I see the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association has excluded itself from the ongoing discussions and proceedings at the group, and other farm orgs are also not happy over what the proposals are coming to. You report on the situation on page 3. What's the story there?
Hard to kind of say, Barry, except that farm bodies are, you know, railing against the Food Vision beef report, essentially. As you said, the INHFA, they've left the building. They left it last week. They said that the Food Vision beef and sheep groups report proposals on, like, diversification and the extensification of the beef and sheep sectors was effectively a cull of the herd. It also said it has serious misgivings in and around the recommendations of reducing the slaughter age to 24 months. Moving on, the IFA has said it won't sign up to the report as it stands, stating that it contains no plans to develop a viable suckler and beef sector. With the livestock chair, Brendan Golden, there, he's saying that no assessment has been carried out on the impacts of the report and that there's no indication of the funding available. And that's something, the funding thread is something that runs across all farm organisations, is how are all these measures going to be funded? You know, Macro President John Keane, he said that there's an obvious unhappiness among the membership of the group, and he's called for constructive negotiation on the measures outlined. The president of the ICSA, Dermot Kelleher, he said he's looking for ministerial intervention. He's saying that the impasse that has been reached can't be surmounted. And he's also looking for Minister Eamon Ryan, Minister Michael McGrath and Minister Charlie McConnell to get farm organisations in and around the table and put numbers on this, essentially, again, in and around the funding. And then you have the ICMSA president, Pat McCormack, saying it's almost impossible to sign on to both the Food Vision Dairy and Beef Group's proposals. So it's sort of at an impasse at the minute. The progress report that was delivered by the chair of the group, which is Professor Thea Hennessy, that's gone to the minister, and he was expecting, you know, a final report at the end of November. But I'd say it'll be very much like the Food Vision dairy report, in that it'll be sent across, but without the backing of farm organisations, by the looks of it. So it's really hard to know where it goes from here, but it's definitely one to watch.
Yeah, definitely one to watch, Amy. And look, as you mentioned there, the funding side of things, and it is, I think, a fair comment to make that, you know, signing up to these proposals on either, you know, reducing stock numbers or slaughtering cattle earlier, it's a bit hard to do when you don't know what farmers will be paid to do it or how the incentives will work. And look, sticking with funding and farmer payments, we see a new sheep improvement scheme was launched this week. Our sheep and schemes editor, Darren Carty, has a full write-up on it on pages 36 and 37 in the paper. But what can you tell listeners for now?
Yeah, a quick one on this, Barry. So this, the sheep improvement scheme is for the next CAP, which begins next year. It lasts until 2027. And this scheme is essentially going to replace the sheep welfare scheme that farmers will be familiar with. It's going to pay €12 a year, and it's open to lowland sheep farmers and hill sheep farmers. There's a €20 million budget over the course of the next CAP for it, and farmers will be paid for carrying out two actions from a list of six. So they have a choice there to choose what actions they can carry out. And as you said, Darren has a full breakdown on everything sheep farmers need to know in this week's paper, and it's online too.
And brilliant, Amy. Look, one final one there from yourself on page three. You also give another update on the bird flu situation. There's been another outbreak in the poultry flock. Where is it this time?
It's in Monaghan again, and it's not far from the first turkey flock that went down about 2 weeks ago, Barry, essentially. So a second case of highly pathogenic bird flu has been confirmed in a second turkey flock. Highly pathogenic, what does that mean in plain English? Essentially, that's how deadly the disease is and how quick it can spread. So the higher the pathogenicity, the worse it is, essentially. So that's two poultry flocks in the country that have now gone down with the disease. There are two turkey flocks. There's none in chicken or layer flocks. The first flock had around 3,500 birds, and it's understood that the second flock has similar numbers. So you're talking in the region of 7,000 birds and all that'll be culled, and both farmers will receive compensation as a result of their losses. The zones, the protection zones and surveillance zones have also been extended as well in and around the Holden. So a 3K protection zone and surveillance zone of at least 10K are now in place around the Holden, and they'll that obviously is the same across the border there, obviously, because it's on the border with Fermanagh. They're obviously keeping a close eye on it in Northern Ireland as well. But no risk to Christmas turkeys, Barry, either. I can't see a risk being to that. You know, there's plenty of other producers around the country, and obviously this is very tough for these two turkey producers. Their whole flocks have been wiped out, but no risk of a shortage of turkeys this Christmas. And it's probably worth pointing out that last year, between November and January, you know, there was six outbreaks in poultry flocks in general, and 200,000 birds were culled. So we're nowhere near the level we were at last year either. So that's one positive to take from it, and hopefully it can be contained from here on. But the next couple of weeks will tell another story.
Moving on to Pat O'Toole. Pat, you have another update in this week's paper on Kerry Co-op. You write on page six that a special general meeting is on the cards down there. Can you tell us a bit more for listeners?
It's hard to be definitive about what's going on in the co-op. A lot of people are tight-lipped, but what we do have confirmation of is that the people who are gathering signatures lodged them Monday of last week. They reckon 1,190 signatures. Previously, it had been thought that would fall well short, because previously it had been indicated that the threshold was 20% of the entire co-op shareholding, which would be there's over 12,000 shareholders, so you're talking about somewhere in the region of twice that number being required to trigger. But it turns out that the threshold is 20% of the A and B shareholders, and there's about 6,000 A and B shareholders combined, so the threshold is about 1,200. So they're in or around what they need. The signatures are the letters of intent requesting an SGM are being processed by the admin staff in Kerry Co-op. It's taking some time because they're also going through one of their share events. There have been two a year in recent years where they allow people who are shareholders in the co-op to cash in their shares in exchange for cash. And what the co-op does is it sells 5.9 PLC shares, giving an almost full see-through value in the co-op shares, because the co-op effectively is now an investment vehicle in Kerry Group, or the PLC as it's known. The co-op is expected to have an SGM. They're very close to the threshold, and as things stand, our understanding is that they're being allowed to continue to collect signatures and add them to the pile. The expectation is that some of the signatures will be deemed invalid for a variety of reasons, because they've been collected over a period of a year and a half. It may be that people are no longer in possession of shares because they may have traded them away in one of the share events. It may be that people have transferred shares as they're perfectly allowed to do, or people may have been deceased, or they may have been transferred from the A and B shareholding register into C shareholders because they're inactive. And if, you know, for any of those reasons, then their letter must be taken out of the pile. So it's quite involved. But I suppose the nub of it is that the general expectation has now switched to that there will be an SGM. If there is an SGM, it's for the purpose of locking in the see-through value of those co-op shares. And that would put what we're calling, I suppose, handcuffs, golden handcuffs on the co-op board. They would not be able to make any large-scale investment without shareholder approval, because all but 100 million of the 2 billion of value in the co-op would be locked up, and the shareholders would have effective ownership of that. So why would they need more than 100 million? Well, we know that talks have recommenced at some level between Kerry Co-op and Kerry Group about buying a majority shareholding in Kerry Group's Irish business, effectively the dairy business and the associated agribusiness. And that would be a mirror to what happened in Glanbia, where the co-op bought a majority stake in what became known as Glanbia Ireland. And then they bought it out entirely a year ago. So now we have Tirlon, which is the former Glanbia Ireland. And the negotiations are at an early stage. There were negotiations last year. There was a big disagreement around valuation, around management structure, and it collapsed in March of last year. So there's no guarantee the negotiations will reach fruition. But if they do, the co-op is going to need to spend a lot of money, or farmers individually are going to have to put, who are active milk suppliers, are going to have to put a lot of money in, because it's going to cost hundreds of millions. And those shareholders who have no interest in buying the dairy business want to curtail the power that the co-op board has. And that's where
there's
we
a,
are.
There's a lot to it, Pat. Yes. It's quite technical stuff. But look, there's more on it for fur readers and dairy farmers and those applying to Kerry Co-op on page 6 of the paper. And I know, Pat, look, it's one you're going to keep on as developments occur there over the weeks ahead. Moving on to news correspondent Declan O'Brien next, folks. Look, Dec, yourself and our agribusiness editor, Lorcan Roach Kelly, write on page 13 that new planting priorities are causing supply headaches for Irish nurseries. They're saying the trees people are looking for might not be there. Look, I suppose this is a big one, as you know, with new planting targets from the government and the new planting premiums to come in January, people are going to be looking for trees. I suppose, what's going wrong for the nurseries?
Well, what nurseries are saying, Barry, is that they're on a three-year cycle. And they're saying that if you want trees to plant in 2023, which we're talking about now, they had to go in as saplings in 2020. And in 2020, the whole focus of the planting program was on planting spruce, primarily Sitka spruce. But now, because the emphasis in the forestry program has shifted more to hardwoods and native species, they're saying, well, the pipeline, the supply pipeline, isn't correct. What nurseries are saying is that, fine, we may have enough trees to meet demand, but we mightn't have enough of the right trees to meet demand. So if there's a big push on hardwoods and on native species, and there's certainly the premiums would suggest that a lot more people are going to go the hardwood route of the native species route, then the nurseries are saying we mightn't have enough trees to meet demand. And they're saying, whereas in the past, any shortfall in tree supplies might have been able to be filled from the UK, they might have been able to bring in British oak or other hardwoods. Because of Brexit, that's now gone. So there are real fears out there that if there is a big uptake in native species in come next spring, that they mightn't be there from the nurseries to meet the demand. Yeah. And the other slight problem is that they could then be left as well with an overhang of Sitka spruce. So they are the worries that are there at the moment.
I see what you mean, Dec. And look, particularly with people looking for, you'd imagine going to be looking for those native species under the likes of acres and the new planting premiums, getting over €1,000 for planting native tree. So it'd be interesting to see where that one goes. And look, moving on to news correspondent Rachel Donovan. Rachel, I think you were at a farm safety conference yesterday in Togash Ashdown. You have an update there on page four. But look, firstly, could you tell listeners what the event was about? And then I think Minister of State for Farm Safety, Martin Hayden, was there too. And could you tell us what he had to say?
Yeah, Barry. So there was a few interesting findings from the Be Safe National Farm Safety Conference yesterday. I suppose in relation to one study carried out on students alone, it found that there was actually no association between farming experience and students' level of risk perception. So I suppose what this means is that students who were working on a farm on a regular basis didn't differ from those who had no experience in farms in terms of accidents that occur. Another thing that was talked about from different studies was near misses on farms, Barry, and I suppose the research showed that those who had a near miss with animals or with a tractor or with machinery versus those who got away from the accident versus those who actually got injured in the accident were more likely to be more wary in the future. So I suppose the fact that it was a near miss and they don't know what could have happened, that it could have been fatal, it leaves them, as I said, more wary and their risk perception is higher, whereas the people who actually have been injured have a lower risk perception. And the other thing then, I suppose, as we go into the weekend, Barry, there was a few other just points that were made. Farmers over the age of 50 are more likely to be injured on farms between Thursday and Saturday. And as well, children increased, farm fatalities increased in children over the weekends as well. And yeah, as you said, Mr. Martin Hayden was there and he spoke about the different funding involved in farm safety this year from the government. And he spoke about the farming simulators that have been launched across 18 different ag colleges across the country. So that'll definitely raise awareness there in terms of farm safety.
Yeah, you'd imagine so, Rachel. I think we saw those simulators at the National Ploughing Championships there, and they're an interesting machine, and hopefully they do get rolled out and that the use is got for them. Look, it won't be long coming around as you move into the springtime when lads are out calving again. I saw you had a piece as well there online about student farm safety or the student experience on farms. And look, a lot of lads would get students from either the veterinary colleges or the ag colleges in for work placement next spring. So what is it that the event heard about student experience on farms when it comes to farm safety?
Yeah, well, I suppose what was found in the students who were surveyed was that they generally have a good understanding of health and safety, and they've all been taught farm health and safety in college. There's every ag course now has farm safety module. But I suppose where accidents occur is when they have been negatively influenced by the farmer or friends or whoever that may be. It could be a case of get the job done quick. And, the culture is there just to get on with the job, as opposed to maybe putting farm safety to the fore.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it's one I know we'll continue to keep readers updated on. Look, thanks for joining, Rachel. That's all we have time for this week, folks. Remember, you can find out more about all of the stories discussed by the team today in this week's paper, available in shops across the country now. There are stories from across the farm sector, including news of a record cereal harvest for 2022 and an improvement in dairy beef margins. We also have our latest Irish Farmers Journal Junior Supplement. The pullout is ideal for young readers and is filled with the stories from up and down the country on behalf of young farmers. One not to be missed. Thanks for joining and for listening. Safe farming, and talk to you the next time.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.